Let's turn to Colossians as we complete this study. We've been spending some time on this. Let me get my other clicker. That one doesn't seem to be working. It'll probably go four slides at once there. Let's see if this one does it. There we go. All right, so we've been working through these books, these letters that Paul has written. They're a little bit shorter in nature. We've looked at Colossians. We've spent time in the first four or three chapters, and then we're coming to the end of chapter four. In chapter four, we're talking about some practical things earlier in that chapter. Things in regard to, you know, new converts, our Christian fellowship and worship in the home with wives and husbands and children, as well as parents. We've also talked about servants and masters and their relationship to each other and their relationship ultimately to God. We've talked about evangelism and service. And now we get near the end. If you go to verse 7, we'll notice that Paul is going to, as he often does, he's going to mention several people. And so we're just briefly looking at each of these individuals who are fellow workers with Paul. So in verse 7, the first person he mentions is a man named Tychicus. We spent some time last week discussing him. And so we do note that Tychicus was the man who delivered this letter that we are reading to the people in Colossae. And to me, it's kind of interesting. He's the servant who did that. The second individual mentioned in verse number 9 is a man named Onesimus. Now, as we mentioned last week, if you want to read more about Onesimus, go to the book or the letter of Philemon. Philemon was the master of the man we know as Onesimus, who was a slave to Philemon. And so we're going to explore that letter later on. I don't want to steal a bunch from there. But in some way, Onesimus had come in contact with Paul, and Paul had the opportunity to teach him the gospel. And now Onesimus is with Paul, and so the letter to Philemon is Paul talking about his relationship with Philemon and Onesimus. We'll talk more about that later. So let's go to the next section. Let's go to verse 10. We'll just start reading there. Articus, my fellow prisoner, greets you. Mark, the cousin of Barnabas, concerning whom you have received instructions, if he comes to you, welcome him. And Jesus, who is called Justice, these are the only men of the circumcision among my fellow workers for the kingdom of God, and they have been a comfort to me. So let's stop there. We'll come back and look at 12. So let's just note the ones he mentions here. So the first one he mentions as with him is Articus. And what do we know about Articus? All right, we know from Acts that he was with Paul during this period of his mission work. Acts 19 and verse 29, he gets a mention. You may remember that's when Paul is dealing with some issues with some of the Jews who are following him and trying to create issues for him. Also with the idol makers as well. And so he gets mentioned there in Acts 19, verse 29. Again, in chapter 20, verse number 4, he gets mentioned again as among Paul's fellow workers. And then finally, one last time in the book of Acts, if you go to Acts 27, he again gets mentioned in 27, verse 2. Now, what's the significance of that? Well, like a lot of first century Christians, we don't know much about him. There were a lot of first century Christians we don't know anything about. But we do get a little insight to his impact on the mission work or the evangelistic efforts of Paul. That he was somebody Paul could rely on, was there often with Paul. In Philemon 1:24, he's mentioned there as well. And in that little short letter, Paul notes him as a fellow worker with him in his efforts. So, not a lot more about Articus that I know. But he does get a brief mention. Second name, we know a little bit more about. Now, if you're here on Sunday morning for that Bible study, you should know a little bit more about him. What do we know about John Mark? Now, I'm going to do a quiz for you, Jody. You can answer. Who is John Mark? What do we know about him? Is he an apostle?
No, he's a cousin.
He's a cousin to who?
Barnabas,
right? He's a cousin to Barnabas. What else do we know about him?
He deserted Paul. Paul was not after him for a while.
Yeah, we're going to go to the negative. yes, if you look in the book of Acts, before we go to that, where's the first time we see him mentioned?
Nope. No.
Anybody tell me, when's the first mention of John Mark?
Were they at his house when he got out of jail?
Yes. When the angel freed Peter from prison, you remember shortly after the murder or the martyrdom of James, Peter has been put in prison, and Herod thought, what, to do the same thing to Peter? Well, an angel frees Peter, and he goes to the home of John Mark's mother. So that's really the first time we see him. But the first time he gets involved in the work, at least from the book of Acts standpoint, is with Paul and Barnabas. You remember the first missionary journey that Paul went on? The other important person on that journey was Barnabas. Well, Barnabas that mention about Peter is Acts 12:12, by the way. Later in Acts 12:25 is when Barnabas wants to bring along John Mark. However, as was mentioned, if you go to chapter 13, they're in the midst of the first evangelistic journey. And verse 13 tells us what? The end of that verse, John left them and returned to Jerusalem. A very brief statement. We have no idea why he left. But what we do know about it is that Paul did not appreciate what happened. Whatever it was, whatever the reason was, Paul did not appreciate that he left them. He felt like he abandoned the work. And that's important because when you go later to chapter 15, they decide, Paul and Barnabas, we need to go back. We need to go back into Galatia. We need to go visit these congregations again. And so they start to put together these plans to leave. And Barnabas, in chapter 15, verse 37, wants to take along John, or John Mark. But Paul did not. And it's interesting because if you read that, things became so contentious between them. The English Standard in verse 39 said there arose a sharp disagreement between Barnabas and Paul. And so ultimately what happens? They go separate ways. Barnabas takes John Mark. They go to the Isle of Crete. And Paul, this is where we're introduced to somebody else that's very important to the work, Silas. We don't probably appreciate all the work he did with Paul. But then they go back into Galatia. And so you see that. So that's not a great beginning to John Mark. But we know that's not how the story ended. I want you to go to 2 Timothy chapter 4. Verse 11. So Paul, again, is closing out his letter. This is his last letter, by the way, that he wrote. Second Timothy was the last one that he penned. It's believed shortly after this he was martyred as well. But I want you to notice, as he's closing out this letter, he makes a request. 2 Timothy 4, verse 11. It says, Luke alone is with me. Okay, so at this point, Paul is in prison, and he only has Luke as a companion, another important person to Paul's ministry. But notice what he says. Get Mark, John Mark, and bring him with you, for he is very useful for me for ministry. So whatever differences they had, all of those are gone by this point. Paul actually says, I need him. I'm kind of paraphrasing. But he says, he can be a use to me in my ministry. And so he tells Timothy, I want you to bring John with you. And so you can see how that relationship was repaired. In a little bit earlier letter, Philemon 1:24, Paul again calls John Mark a fellow laborer. And so you have the renewal of that relationship being mended.
Paul also writes the gospel.
Yeah.
And very likely wrote it before the wrong.
Yeah, so you're going right to my next point. So we're our minds are melding together here. I'm kind of worried.
that sort of leaves Barnabas out of the whole thing. And Barnabas had faith in John Mark's development, took the time to take him with him and train him.
What if Barnabas had given up on John Mark?
Barnabas sort of left out of the story. Mm-hmm. Barnabas is the one who took courage, if you will, train John Mark and take him with him. Paul changed, I think, as a testament to what God did through Barnabas with John.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and let's remember, when he goes on that first missionary journey, he's young. Now, we don't know exactly how young he is, but he's a young man. I don't know if he's similar to the age of Titus and Timothy, but we'd be guessing, but he's young at least. He's young seemingly in the faith. And so he has a bad decision. However, what you see is a man who overcomes that. And what's amazing is, of the four Gospels, the first one to be written is by John Mark. That's another amazing thing. He wrote before Matthew, before Luke, and well before John. And so he's the first of those to write, which also tells you another thing. It tells you that he was a man who was educated well enough to write. So just kind of some amazing things. John Mark's one of my favorite ones, little known characters to think about and wonder about.
Mm-hmm. Before, when Paul and Barnabas went to Jerusalem, there's where they picked Mark up and they took Mark with them back to Antioch before that first Christian journey. That's how Mark got to be in Antioch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he is from Jerusalem. That's where his mother lived. But again, any kind of answer to the question of why he went back would be speculation. Nobody knows. Yeah. Again, I think that would be speculation. Oh, you mean just another one. Yeah, the name Mary was popular. It's like somebody was talking the other day. What was the name? Oh, it wasn't Meredith, but there was a name somebody was talking about the other day that they see all the time. It's like, and all these kids were born in like 2005, and they were joking about, what happened in 2005? Why is this name so popular? Mary was just a popular name of the day. You kind of see that. All right. Good comments. Thank you. Let's go back. We are introduced to one more person that I'm going to go over. I don't know why I didn't put Luke on here. I'll cover Luke in a future lesson. So sorry about that. He does go on to mention Epaphras. We talked about him early on. Epaphras, who is one of you. Again, remember, he's from Colossae, but why did he not take the letter back? Well, we don't know exactly, but one of the reasons probably is he's very sick. You remember, he's still ill, although it seems like he's getting better. Epaphras, who is one of you, a servant of Jesus, of Christ Jesus, greets you, always struggling on your behalf in his prayers, that you may stand mature and fully assured in all the will of God. So Epaphras, Paul's commending him to them. He's still praying, even though he's sick. He's still thinking about his brothers and sisters in Colossae. Verse 13, for I bear him witness that he has worked hard for you and for those in Laodicea and Hierapolis. Okay, then 14, Luke, the beloved physician, greets you. I don't have him on the board, but I need to do a study of him. I don't know why I skipped that one. But Luke, who is he? Did you have something? So hold on to that one just for a second. Yeah, I want to come back to that, so don't remind me. Let me talk Luke, and then we'll talk about justice, because I did skip him too. Luke, what do we know about Luke? He's a physician, a doctor. What else do we know about him? We can guess, or people have made guesses, that maybe he was from Ephesus, but well, that's a guess. Don't know that for sure. What'd you say? He wrote two books, right? He wrote a gospel and the book of Acts. And in reality, those two really, we almost should see them as one, because in his writing, he just continues right on from his gospel and into the book of Acts. We've separated them, but those are almost a part of one writing. It's like a two-volume set. But is he a Jew? Nope, he's a Gentile, and he's was often mentioned with Paul. He did a lot of help. Who else is he mentioned with? Who's he teamed up with sometimes?
Silas.
Who?
Silas.
Maybe sometimes, yeah. But there's a couple that he gets lined up with a lot. Priscilla and Aquila. Yeah, he seemed to have a really good relationship with them as well. You'll note that they're together sometimes, working together. So Luke, a Gentile convert, again, possibly a convert that Paul helped to teach, but we don't know that. Paul does not speak about Luke in the exact way he does Timothy and Titus. He calls both of them sons, right? He never calls Luke that. It may be an indication he didn't convert him, but I don't know. It's speculation. But they definitely had a close working relationship. So Luke, I greet you. What about Jesus, also called Justice? Not very much about him. That's why I didn't put much on here. He may be the justice that's mentioned in the book of Acts who was in charge of the temple grounds at one point. No, I'm sorry. I think that's right, yeah. So in the book of Acts, but that's speculation. That's just, they had similar names. I don't know much more than that. So not a lot to know about Justice or Jesus. Wouldn't that be a tough name to bear as a Christian? I think I'm going to change my name. Like, God, can you give me a different name? I can't live up to that one. No, I mean, we wear the name Christ, don't we, Christian? So we're proud to, not proud, but we're thankful to be called Christians. And he was called Jesus. So let's talk about, any others that you wanted to mention before I go to Demas? Okay, the sad one. I left him to the end because he's the most sad to me. John Mark has a redeeming story, right? He made a mistake, but by the end of the Bible narrative, we see him redeemed, and you know, he's doing great things for God. Demas, however, the commentary is not quite as uplifting. It's interesting. At the time that Paul wrote Philemon, his letter. If you go to Philemon 1:24, I reference this one a lot. A lot of names put there. But what's noted about Demas in Philemon 1:24? Paul calls him what? Along with the others, what is he? A fellow worker. So at the writing of Philemon, and here in this letter, he's noted as one of Paul's fellow workers. However, if you go to Paul's final letter, go back to 2 Timothy chapter 4. 2 Timothy chapter 4. You know, I can pray and be hopeful that this story ended up better, but at least these are the last words that we have from the Apostle Paul in regard to Demas. This is 2 Timothy 4 and verse 10. He says, "For Demas, in love with the present world." That's not a good statement, is it? "Has deserted me and gone to Thessalonica." So, not a very good commentary. That's where the commentary on Demas's life in the Bible ends. I can be hopeful that things turned around, but at least at that point, it ends in a negative note. Now, what exactly caused him to fall in love with the world? Again, we're not told, but maybe it's just generally he lost his faith in God, and he fell more in love with the world than he did with Jesus. I don't know exactly. But I do know what Paul says, that his desire for earthly things overcame his desire to serve God. And so you have there with Demas, as we close out, kind of a negative tone. Any other questions about that section? Yep. And he won't stop.
You've got to maintain a love that's vibrant and growing enough to make sure that we don't follow the same steps as he.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Be a John Mark. Don't be a Demas. We all fall sometimes, but get back up. God can still do great things with you. And then we close out the letter with verse 18. This is the final verse there. Oh, it started working. I picked this one up. Didn't realize I did it. Verse 18 in the English Standard tells us that I, Paul, and notice what he says here, I, Paul, write this greeting with my own hand. Remember my chains. Grace be with you. What do you think he means by that? I'll write this with my own hand. What does that imply?
With his own hand.
Okay. Yeah, that's what it explicitly says, but what does it imply? Steve? Somebody else wrote the rest, right? So chapter 1 through 4:17 was written by somebody else's hand. I'm writing this greeting in my own hand. It became kind of Paul's way to sign his letters. As you can imagine, even in the first century, you already had false doctrines being taught. Could it have been impossible that you had false letters circulating? And so to authenticate the letter, Paul signs this at the end. So he's not just transcribing it and letting the person doing the actual writing just do the whole thing. He does sign it. A couple other statements where he's made similar statements he's made. 1 Corinthians 16:21, as he ends that one, he says, I, Paul, write this greeting with my own hand. And then you have this one in Galatians 6, verse 11. Again, the English Standard says, see with what large letters I am writing to you with my own hand. Now, we could speculate, and many have, about why he's writing with large letters. The Bible doesn't tell us exactly, but obviously he had some issue that caused him to not be able to write well. And so his script is large, and it seems to at least been in these congregations, they would have recognized that Paul would have needed to write with large letters. It's not because Paul's not intelligent. Paul's very intelligent. So it's led many to believe that he had some kind of physical thing going on, either with his eyes or his hands.
The intonation of 2 Corinthians, he had an eye problem, right?
Yeah,
and eyes, he couldn't see. You'd have to write larger to be able to make it out for himself and be able to make sure that what he's writing is what he intended to write, you know?
Yeah, so if you go to 2 Corinthians 12, he talks about his thorn in the flesh. Now, he never identifies in 2 Corinthians 12 what that thorn is. But some speculate that maybe this relates back to his conversion on the road to Damascus when he sees the bright light, and that has caused some long-lasting effect to his eyesight that now it's caused him. Again, speculation, that the Bible does not clearly state that, but that's one theory on why he's doing that. Yes, ma'am.
The book of Romans, Paul tells us in chapter 16 that Tertius wrote this apostle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he'll have different men, like in that one, he has him write that letter to Rome, to the Romans, and he uses different people to write his letter. So yeah, he identifies the guy there in the Roman letter. And in 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, verse 17, just another look here. Again, Paul says it again. I, Paul, write this greeting. So we've already seen what? Romans. Now we've seen Colossians, Corinthians, Galatians, 2 Thessalonians all speak about him signing in his own hand. And then he says, this is the sign of genuineness in every letter of mine. And again, Philemon, just to reaffirm that, he again says, I'm writing in my own hand. So this is something he did all the time. So as he did to the Colossians.
So what does the greeting mean? Does that mean just the last line?
Yeah, it's kind of like our salutation, right? You get the end of a letter, you say, best regards, or thank you, sincerely. Right? They had a more extended salutation than we do. But that's the greeting.
Really, an apostle, whether he's really authoritative or not, so he's trying to put his name at the end of it to say that this really does have a measure of authority with it.
Yeah. And if you had anybody writing on behalf of Paul that really wasn't Paul, this would be important. So they could see this one's actually from him and not somebody writing on his behalf. All right, that's the book of Colossians. Any questions before we close out? Yes, ma'am.
So, you mentioned, like, from his time, do we have, like, Paul's writing in large letters? Because, you know, when you read it, it's like, what? It's not large, but probably when you have the actual script,
yeah,
you see how large it is. I'd love to see that.
Yeah, I would too. Unfortunately, we don't. After we finish this study, my tentative plan is to go in to talk about how we got the Bible. And we'll talk about manuscripts and what manuscripts we have. The simple answer is we don't have any first-hand manuscripts. We have copies. And so, obviously, when the copyist is going through, he's not writing with Paul's hand. So he's copying what Paul wrote, but he's not writing with Paul's hand. So we don't have any of those.
Yeah, because the scripts, like manuscripts are like written like thousands of years ago, right? So they wouldn't be able to last because it's on paper, right? So it has to be copied, right?
Yeah, I'm going to save most of that discussion for them, but we have been able to keep some of them. Mm-hmm. Well, lots of them. We have lots, actually. And I'll save that discussion.
The original.
That's what I'm saying. We don't have any original manuscripts, but we have very old copies. But let me save that discussion for that period, because we'll open a whole can of worms that I can't deal with right now. But great question, one we should be asking. A lot of good information out there. But no, we don't have. I wish we did, right? That'd be cool. But I have a reason why I think God did not preserve the original manuscripts, and I'll talk about that then. Yeah. Yes, that's what I was saying. So we have some very early copies of them. We'll talk more about that then. That dog's wanting to chase that rabbit. Go ahead.
You know, you were talking about the way you signed the letters.
Mm-hmm.
Through history, a lot of people kindly sort of did that, even with secular things. You know, scientists and famous authors and things like that, sometimes they would sign them in a similar fashion, like, you know, yes, mm-hmm. This is actually my writing, stuff like that, even though it was in a secular sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I've seen some doctor's signatures. You know, maybe they learned from him. I don't know. All right. Any others about Colossian letter? All right, let's go on. Mine's in the same opening. We have another book called 1 Thessalonians. Let's talk about the Thessalonian letter. So we'll just introduce some things here. We won't have much time to get into the letter, but we'll do some introductory things. So what are we talking about? All right, so we've been going through the letters. We're almost halfway. Once we get through this letter, we'll be crossing the Rubicon into halfway. We're on the other side. So we've climbed the mountain. So, talking about 1 Thessalonians, one of the major ideas that comes out is the second coming of Christ. Paul is really going to key in on that idea. And you think about the Thessalonian church, what are we talking about? So let's go to 1 Thessalonians 1, verse 1. So Paul, Silvanus, now that's another way of saying Silas. So when he says Silvanus, that is Silas that we read about in other places. And Timothy. Well, we know Timothy quite well, don't we? To the church of the Thessalonians, in God the Father and the Lord Jesus Christ, grace to you and peace. And that's a normal way to introduce a letter, grace and peace. And so we look at the Thessalonians and where they're from. We're going to first look at the city itself. So this map is a map of the places that Paul went to. And you'll see there about verse 20, or the number 23, that is Thessalonica. What do you note about it? It's a seaport, right? It's right on the sea. It's not the island. It's actually on the land just a little bit back. It's between Philippi and Berea. Here's another one. This might be a little bit better for you, but you see it there. It's right in that cove, right there, just west of Philippi and east of Berea. Yeah, so and as we see, it became a very important city to Macedonia. All right, I still got 5 minutes. I can cover a lot here in 5 minutes. You look at the city, it was actually founded in 315 by the Macedonian king, Cassander. You may know anything about Cassander. History buffs out there, you studied him. He was a commander of a very important man. You get 50 bonus points added to your score. If you can tell who? You got that. Good job. So when Alexander the Great conquered Macedonia, they ended up dividing it between his four commanders. One of those was Cassander. Now, you won't get this one, I bet you. Cassander was married to an important lady, the sister of a man named Alexander, the daughter of Philip the Great. You may know her name?
Mary.
You. Good guess, but no. But you do know it, even though you don't know you know it. Her name was Thessalonica. So, when they conquered the city, they named the city after her. Wouldn't you love that? A man to love you so much, he's going to go out and conquer a city and name it after you. You got to feel pretty good as his wife, right, about that? It was named after the king's wife, Thessalonica, again, attached to Alexander the Great. We'll look more at Macedonia in just a minute. But Rome, so the who was Alexander the Great with? What nation state was he a part of? This is important. Greece, right? Greece. If you go to the book of Daniel, you actually, I don't think his name's there, but you get a mention of Cassander in the book of Daniel as one of the commanders of Alexander the Great. Interestingly enough, prophesied about in the Old Testament. So, Greece conquered this area in 315. So, we're about 75 years or so from the writing of what book in the Old Testament? Y'all know this? Malachi, right? So, you have now the Jews were under Babylonian captivity, were then freed and allowed to go back home under what period? Who? Darius. Do you know what kingdom it was? The Persian, Medo-Persian Empire is where they, then the Grecians conquered the Medo-Persians. All right, so they're in power. They take over this area. The name of Thessalonica prior to its being named Thessalonica was Therma. The people of Thrace, give you lots of names here, had come over and settled in the area and called it Therma. Anybody think about why it might be called Therma? Warm, good, good, good. It had hot springs. And so it was called Therma. Kind of neat, right? So Thracian people called it Therma. And then the Grecian people come in and they call it Thessalonica. Okay, here's some super bonus points. Without looking on your phone as we close class out, you're going to ring that bell on me. What is the name of this seaport city today? Modern times. Thessaloniki. Or Silnaki. Silnaki. You go look it up on your Google app. That's what you'll find. It's still a very important port city. And I have a few more things to say to you. We'll stop there with that. The Romans conquer it in 168. That's where I need to pick up next week. We'll talk about the Romans for just a second. And about the condition at the time Paul comes to town, because this will be important. Thank you all. We'll go ahead and close out there. Please take some time, read the letter. I read it today in about 20 minutes, the whole letter, chapters 1 through 5. I'm a slow reader. You can read it. It won't take you long. So spend some time reading it and thinking about it before next week. Thank you all very much. We'll close out there.